Good evening and welcome to Nightline Africa. We are coming to you live from the English to Africa service of The Voice of America. Thanks for joining us. I'm Peter Clotte in Washington, D.C.
We had a very difficult winter. We cannot let up. We must sustain our support. In my view, we must keep going until Ukraine wins a just and durable peace consistent with the UN Charter. Until once again, human dignity prevails.
U.S. President Joe Biden meets European counterparts.
The biggest part of the vision is to make sure that we're leveraging our relationships in the sense where Haiti can actually lead its own path forward and its own agenda, and we're supporting. But for us to get there, we have to actually address the bigger causes that got Haiti to where it is right now.
Congresswoman Sheila Shefflos McCormick says her vision is for the U.S. to support Haiti's lead as it charts its own path forward.
We want to build a credible, dependable, and capable developmental state. So what is that state that we're trying to craft? It's a state that prioritizes economic development and champions and gives a clear vision for industrialization, for development.
And the Electoral Commission of Namibia releases a list of presidential candidates to compete in the coming general election. Those stories and more coming up on Nightline Africa. U.S. President Joe Biden met with European counterparts on Friday in a brief trip to Germany, where leaders discussed the war in Ukraine and the widening conflict in the Middle East. VOA's White House correspondent Anita Power reports from the German capital, Berlin.
President Joe Biden made a lightning-fast, pomp-filled visit to Germany Friday, making an in-person push for transatlantic unity, scooping up Germany's highest civilian honor for his contribution to transatlantic relations, and thanking Germany for its support of Ukraine as the war with Russia rages on.
We had a very difficult winter. We cannot let up. We must sustain our support. In my view, we must keep going until Ukraine wins a just and durable peace consistent with the UN Charter. Until once again, human dignity prevails.
Support for Ukraine was also a focus of Biden's meetings with leaders of Britain and France, where they discussed a victory plan put forth by Ukraine's President Volodymyr Zelensky. John Kirby is White House National Security Communications Advisor.
As we've made clear, we support President Zelensky's plan for a just peace. It's critical that whatever that peace looks like, it has to be acceptable to him and to the Ukrainian people.
And the brutal conflict in Gaza injected itself into Friday's state visit, with news that Israeli forces had killed the leader of Hamas, the U.S.-designated terror group that sparked the war with their stunning attack on Israel last October 7th.
The death of the leader of Hamas represents a moment of justice. He had the blood of Americans and Israelis, Palestinians and Germans and so many others on his hands. I told the Prime Minister of Israel yesterday, let's also make this moment an opportunity to seek a path to peace, a better future in Gaza without Hamas.
Germany's leader agreed.
Mit dem Tod des Hamas-Anführers Sinwar.
The death of Hamas leader Sinwar, who was responsible for the terrible terror attack, hopefully opens a concrete possibility of a ceasefire in Gaza, a deal to free the hostages of Hamas.
Der Hamas.
For Germany, this frenzied one-day visit was suffused with meaning and history. And then it was finished in a matter of hours as Biden flew into the German sunset. Anita Powell, VOA News, Berlin.
U.S. Congresswoman Sheila Shefflos McCormick says her vision is for the country to support Haiti's lead as it charts its own path forward towards peace, stability, and economic development. Her remark comes as the international community, including the United Nations and the U.S., launched efforts to help Haiti resolve some of the challenges it faces. Congresswoman Shefflos McCormick is the first Democratic member of Congress of Haitian descent with a large Haitian-American constituency. She also sits on the House of Representatives Committee on Foreign Affairs, which is responsible for Haiti and Africa. In a wide-ranging interview via Microsoft Teams, Congresswoman Chevalier McCormick talks to me. Some of the topics include her vision for U.S.-Haiti relations and the renewal of the African Growth and Opportunities Act, or AGOA, which expires next year. Here's part one of the conversation.
The biggest part of the vision is to make sure that we're leveraging our relationships in the sense where Haiti can actually lead its own path forward and its own agenda, and we're supporting. But for us to get there, we have to actually address the bigger causes that got Haiti to where it is right now. The security issues that we're having, the heart of the security issue, which is the guns that are coming out of the United States going into Haiti. And once in Haiti, it goes throughout the entire Caribbean. So making sure that we're passing legislation to actually stop guns going into Haiti is imperative, but also making sure we have a real mission on the ground to help and protect Haitians from the gangs, because the gangs have just been really dominating in certain areas and terrorizing people for so long. And so we have to address that if we're going to have any kind of real economic stability in the area. And in the U.S. right now, we hear a lot of conversations about immigration and who's coming into the country. But we have to realize that dealing with the root issues is the only way we're going to actually stop immigration.
Do you think Congress at the moment can do more? Or what steps do you think Congress can help the U.S. government to actualize your vision for Haiti?
Well, Congress definitely could do more. We've seen the most dysfunctional Congress ever in this 118th session. That was led by Republicans who have not been able to roll, pass, or even make sure we're getting bills that help us actually thrive and stay open. We've been close to a shutdown, what, three times already with Republican leadership. We've never had Congress like this. So that internal civil war with the Republican Party has really stopped us from doing the work we have to do internationally and even reauthorizing important bills. And you know, anytime I talk about Haiti, I always talk about Haiti and Africa together, because if I compare the two, I think there's a lot of similarities there when you're trying to have emerging governments, emerging countries who are looking to attain democracy through very difficult circumstances. And a lot of what I'm seeing, the international world has been trying to impose this standard that's not realistic for the post-colonized world. And when you keep making these policies, you're setting up these countries for failure. And so there's a lot we can do, including leveraging our diaspora. And I think that's one of the first steps that we have to do. One of the things I complain about constantly is when I go, you know, I travel a lot for foreign affairs. When I go into countries in Africa, why is my face the only Black face there? So that tells me the cultural competency to deal with that country isn't present. Because for it to be present, we should have an ally, a diaspora member. You know, if we're in Ghana, we need to have a Ghanaian American person sitting there and saying, hey, this is how we implement, this is how we go forward, so we can be cognizant in a respectful way to work with the country. But when you bring people from, you know, the Midwest and you ship them over to Ghana and now you're telling people what to do, there's a disconnect there, right? You can't even have an honest conversation. So there is a lot we could do more, and we have to seize on every opportunity to do that, especially right now with the changing global context.
Now, you mentioned Africa, so let's look at the Africa Growth and Opportunity Act, popularly known as AGOA, which expires next year. As you are aware, stakeholders have been calling for its renewal. What is your position on that? And do you think it should be renewed?
Absolutely. I think my biggest position, you know, you mentioned vision. This should not be an issue. The conversation shouldn't be whether or not we're actually passing AGOA. The conversation needs to be, it's automatically passed and reauthorized. And quite frankly, AGOA isn't enough. When we're looking at what AGOA actually does, AGOA is dealing with sub-Saharan Africa. When right now, if you're looking at Africa and African countries, they're looking more at a transcontinental trade agreement, right? So we're still behind on that, right? We're still classifying and looking at one segment in which Africa and Africans look at themselves in the continent. So I think we should be focusing on expanding it. The second thing also that we should be looking at is how do we actually deal with the barriers to doing trade in Africa? And those barriers, every business I talk to, it's always about the hesitation about financial instability, right? So we have to deal with that barrier realistically. And I'm happy to say that this administration has made sure that DFC was able to invest in Africa and provide loans and funding up 60%. That's a huge increase, right? Because that is a barrier. A second thing that we have to do to kind of make people a little less anxious when dealing with Africa, because the funding sources sometimes might be tough, we also have to incentivize companies to not just work with Africa in one state. What that means, traditionally, you'll see people who want to go do work in Africa, and they always look at it from an AIDS lens, right? What aid could we bring to Africa? When you're looking at the 1.6 billion people who are in Africa and the commodity of being like $2.7 trillion, we have to encourage American companies to do business in Africa and actually go into different segments.
Sheila Sheffield McCormick is a U.S. Congresswoman from Florida. She spoke with me from here in Washington. Join us on Sunday for the conclusion of the conversation. In Kenya, the leader of the Third Way Alliance says in what may appear to be a hasty move to impeach Deputy President Rigathi Gachagua, a key constitutional requirement was violated. Attorney Ikuru Aukot contends that the constitution requires the deputy president to be present to answer to the charges against him before any impeachment can be carried out. Nevertheless, Gachagua, who was in the hospital at the time, was impeached following his trial in the Senate. He warned that the unfolding political drama could plunge the country into a constitutional crisis. His comments come after a high court suspended the impeachment of Gachagua as deputy president until Thursday, October 24. Attorney Ikuru Aukot tells me that lawyers for the impeached deputy president acted appropriately by seeking redress at the high court.
Going to the trial itself, Article 145, sub Article 5 of the Constitution of Kenya provides that the deputy president or whoever is being impeached must appear, shall appear, you know, before the interrogating the prosecuting authority. In this particular case, the Senate or the committee of the House, a special committee, which they ignored by the as per the Constitution. Now, this did not happen. He was not given this opportunity because the guy fell ill and he was admitted in the hospital. But nonetheless, they decided to go and try him in his absentia and convicted him. So the other point to note is that the whole process was so rushed as if there was really a state of emergency in Kenya. So on the face of it, you can see that it was a predetermined outcome because the trial ended sometime last 1 a.m. in the morning. But already they had the Gazette notice out, impeaching him, removing him. They already had a candidate appointed. The Constitution has timelines. It talks about within 14 days that the president should appoint a successor. Then talks about within 60 days, Parliament shall pass a vote. But all thing was done in a matter of hours. So the whole thing looks, it's a charade, it's laughable.
So in your view, as a lawyer, do you think due process according to the Constitution were not adhered to?
Of course, due process was not adhered to. If you look at Article 50 of the Kenya Constitution, it talks about fair hearing. That was not accorded to him because if you read it together with Article 145 of the Constitution of Kenya, it requires that the person accused about to be impeached must appear. The Constitution uses the word shall, so it's mandatory. He must appear to defend himself. He was not afforded that opportunity. And some of the senators actually raised that concern and said, we had questions for the accused person, that is the deputy president. Now that we are proceeding without him, so there was no due process. This was a political lynching. It has nothing to do with the legalities at all.
Where do Kenyans go from here, especially following this impeachment that you think is an illegality?
The country is very much divided right in the middle. Of course, the political class who sat up to President William Ruto are happy because the whole thing was choreographed. And of course, now it's emerging that members of parliament were bribed to support that motion. And some of them have since come forward to say that, yes, we supported the motion because we were promised that somebody from our region will be appointed the next deputy president. Now, what kind of reasoning is that from a legislator? They never interrogated the charges brought against the deputy president. So we are staring at a possibility of a constitutional crisis where the courts have now said no, stop the impeachment of Deputy President Gachagua. So that means, ideally, he is still the president by law, by constitution, because there is no replacement. On the other hand, they were rushing to try and swear in this other nominee, the current cabinet secretary for interior, meaning because there is a court battle, We'll be talking about two deputy presidents at the same time. We are staring at a constitutional crisis and the possibility of ethnic animosity in the country. And the person causing all this is President William Ruto.
Do you think the reputation of the legislative arms of government have been tarnished as a result of this impeachment?
We don't really have the legislature right now, because the legislature is actually right now an extension or an appendage of the executive. They do everything the president says. The entire parliament of Kenya, that is the National Assembly and the Senate, they don't interrogate. Because even on the face of it, the person moving this motion did not even know what he had put on the paper. He was questioned, was cross-examined. And if you watch those videos, you laugh for yourself, because this is a man, apparently supposed to be a lawyer, but could not even communicate basic concept. So, yes, we don't have a legislator. We lost it. And now we have a chief justice who we understand may be swearing in this deputy president nominee, meaning she will also be flouting court orders from our own court, because our colleagues in the High Court have actually issued orders against Professor Kindiki assuming the position of deputy president. And so deputy president Rigathi Gachagua, with these court orders, the status quo ante has been preserved, meaning he's still the deputy president of the Republic of Kenya.
Attorney Ekuru Aukot is the leader of the Third Way Alliance. He spoke with me from the Kenyan capital, Nairobi. In Uganda, the Deputy Inspector General of Government, an anti-graft agency, is calling on students to use their social media platforms to help in the fight against corruption. Attorney Patricia Achan Okiria encourages students to use their influence to highlight, expose, and report corrupt practices. She also asks that they can play a major role as whistleblowers in the fight against financial malfeasance and wrongdoing. Her remarks came during a recent mentorship conference for upcoming female lawyers, organized by the Islamic University in Uganda, Kampala campus. Patricia Achan Okiria tells me that the students can share evidence, including photos or videos of corrupt acts on social media, which she says her office can use to investigate and prosecute offenders.
So we are talking about promoting strict adherence for the rule of law, eliminating and fostering elimination of corruption. And in so doing, we have brought in new innovative approaches to fight against corruption. And from our recent census, the youth are the majority of the population in Uganda. And we believe that they can play a very significant role in the war against corruption, particularly through the influential platform of social media, like you have said. And we have also noted that they are an age characterized by the rapid technological advancement and widespread connectivity. So they have emerged as a very powerful force, especially when we're talking about mindset change, when we're talking about shaping societal norms, and even fostering accountability.
I know you emphasized the significant role students can play as whistleblowers in the fight against corruption, but there have been instances where misinformation and fake news have been spread on social media platforms when they are unchecked, with no checks and balances. How do you address this concern?
So when we receive cases of corruption, we sieve and look at the admissibility criteria within the law, and then we sanction and investigate. Sometimes at the beginning of investigations, we can discover that this one here is not true. But we also get other leads. For instance, I'll give you an example. If somebody took a picture of somebody taking a bribe, for instance, at the airport, and it became viral, and I picked it up and sanctioned an investigation and dealt with the issue and caused reforms in that institution, I think that is a significant landmark. And at the Inspectorate of Government, we have said the anti-corruption war is the people's war, and therefore we are encouraging citizens to come out boldly and report these cases.
There are concerns that if these young people will use social media platforms and their handles, they take pictures and it goes on, becomes viral, the IGG investigate and the people are brought to book, they face the real possibility of being attacked or being targeted, because as you know, corruption always fights back.
Yes, Corruption does fight back. Even we who are at the forefront in the fight against corruption, you have seen officers also being attacked or threatened or scared. But we've been thick-skinned over time because we keep thinking about innovative approaches, because corruption is like an amoeba. It changes forms and shapes all the time. We could be here, yet the corrupt are planning their schemes. So when we come up with these innovative approaches, by encouraging the youth, we know that we can leverage, we are now in the digital era, we can leverage the technology creatively to fight corruption. And initiatives such as the data visualization, the fact-checking website, basically would empower them to present some of these facts in a compelling manner. But we don't just rely wholly on what they have shared. We go the extra mile and actually sanction investigations. And also, when a whistleblower is victimized or punished, they have protection within the law.
What has been the response so far from the youth, especially the law students?
Well, the response was very good. They asked very, very well thought out questions. And they are very, very happy and willing to join in the war against corruption, because we are doing both mentorship and we are also encouraging them to join the war by reporting cases of corruption.
Patricia Chan-Okiria is the Deputy Inspector General of Government and Anti-Graft Agency. She spoke with me from the Ugandan capital, Kampala. The Electoral Commission of Namibia has released a list of qualified presidential candidates to compete in the coming general election. 15 candidates, including the governing SWAPO candidate and current Namibian Vice President Netumbo Nandi-Ndaitwah, an activist, associate professor and former mayor of Windhoek, Job Chipululo Amopunda. It comes as Namibians go to the polls on November 27 to choose a new president and National Assembly. Analysts say they expect the presidential contest to be competitive, adding that the political dominance of the ruling party SWAPO will be tested in this year's polls. Job Chipululo Amopunda is the presidential candidate for the opposition party Affirmative Repositioning. He tells me his candidacy is an inspiration to the youth of Namibia.
Everything that we do it thoroughly, strategically, and with a clear objectives. Because remember, we are coming from a background of fighting for transparency, equality, and meritocracy. So we always know whatever it is that we are doing. So even in participation and submitting of a nomination, we had to ensure that we comply. We were one of the first ones to submit our application to the Electoral Commission, because we wanted to ensure that there is no hiccup. We are facing this campaign at two levels. One is in terms of outcome-based strategies, which obviously means winning an election. And the other one is from an inspirational perspective. So young people must actually understand and feel and appreciate that there's one of their own on the ballot.
What is your vision for the people of Namibia, and particularly for the youth? Because you said they would draw inspiration from your candidacy.
We want to build a credible, dependable, and capable developmental state. Okay? So what is that state that we're trying to craft? It's a state that prioritizes economic development and champions and gives a clear vision for industrialization, for development. It's a state that is run by the best men and women with talent and energy. It's a state that is characterized by what is called meritocracy. So once you have a capable, dependable, and credible developmental state, you will be able to solve the multitude of problems that our country faces. We are one of the richest countries. We are the second largest producers of uranium, but we also have the award of the second most unequal nation on the face of the earth. So we are a country of contradiction. So we want to ensure that we are no longer a country of contradiction. We want to ensure that we affirm, and the young men and women can understand that this is where our country is. Is and this is where our country is going. Currently, nobody projects a better direction for our country, and that's why we are doing it ourselves.
There are 15 of you, 14 opposition candidates trying to wrestle power from SWAPO party that has dominated the political space of Namibia since independence. Some are suggesting that the The opposition presidential candidates are too many, and this will enable the ruling party to easily win the presidential election. How do you respond to that?
I'm a political scientist by training. I'm sure you know that. But that's part of a problem with the Euro-American-centric obsession with the removal of liberation movement. Now, for us, we are not children. We don't go in this election to say we are just removing SWAPO because of SWAPO. We are removing SWAPO because it's a corrupt machinery. But we also see that there are corrupt foreign-controlled opposition forces that we don't support. We are in this election unique, very clear with principles. So what we are basically saying is that, yes, we are all tired of the corrupt machinery, but we also see the attitude of other political parties, some of them that have been in parliament, who have allowed corrupt activities to go through. So not only SWAPO that is the author of our people's problem, it is also the opposition that have enabled SWAPO to do what they are, that they've been doing.
What do you think your realistic chances are in this coming election? Because they are saying you don't have party structures and you don't have a broad national appeal, which will make you pose a significant political threat to SWAPO.
When I put up my billboards to run as the mayor of Windhoek, they were saying exactly the same. Some of them that were even went on record publicly to say there are no chances ended up coming to me in order for us to negotiate a coalition. I eventually became a mayor. So I'm a man of vision, both practically and also spiritually, from the African orientation. So everything that I've always done, I've always attained and achieved my set objectives. My set objectives are not done, and we don't set our objectives in the street and popular belief. We set our objectives and targets and plans with like-minded activists who have always been with our movement and who have joined our movement and understood what we are trying to do. So we are not at all concerned about what the views of the so-called analysts.
Job Chipululo Amupanda is the presidential candidate for the opposition party Affirmative Repositioning. He spoke with me from the Namibian capital, Windhoek. You are listening to Nightline Africa on the English to Africa service of The Voice of America. I'm your host, Peter Clote, in Washington, D.C. And coming up in the second half of Nightline Africa, the Saturday music spot from our collection of music from the continent. But first, in Zambia, the Action Institute for Policy Analysis Center, or IPAC, is calling on the government to urgently appoint a substantive director general for the Anti-Corruption Commission, or ACC. This, the group says, will bolster the administration's effort in the fight against financial malfeasance and wrongdoing. This after the recent resignation of Tom Shamakamba, the director of the Anti-Graft Agency, over allegations of corruption. Solomon Ngoma is the executive director of Action Institute for Policy Analysis Center, or IPAC. He tells me that the failure to quickly install a new chief will undermine the government's renewed efforts to weed out corruption.
The acting director general, Mrs. Monica Mwansa, did announce to the press that the Anti-Corruption Investigation Commission was investigating about 9 ministers in President Chilema's administration over possible allegations of corruption and what. Now, when you look at the recent launch of the National Policy on Anti-Corruption, which also underscores President Chilema's commitment towards the fight against corruption. However, the delay in appointing a substantive director general and board commissioners of ACC, it may hinder progress so far in the fight against corruption. Why we're calling for the president is because we believe that the Anti-Corruption Commission to do its constitutional mandate, there must be a substantive director general and the ACC board of commissioners who are held responsible in the daily operations of the works of the anti-corruption.
The president and his government have repeatedly said the fight against corruption is ongoing, and they have put in measures to ensure that those who stole public funds are brought to book. Are you doubting this commitment?
No, so far would say that the fight against corruption seems to be a bit bad, because members of the current regime, no one has been brought before the court of law or been arrested by the corruption. So we are worried ourselves to say, because we don't believe that We are not of the view that in this government there is no people who have committed the offences or abused their powers. Even so, we believe that, especially that the acting director general did alarm the nation when she said that she was investigating 9 ministers. The people of Zambia are still waiting to hear who are those 9 ministers.
But Solomon, President Hakainde Hichilema recently issued a stern warning to government ministers, civil servants, and public officials, urging them to resign before the law catches up with them. This, some Zambians are saying, shows his commitment, unwavering commitment, in the fight to weed out corruption in Zambia. Doesn't this bring some form of relief to anti-corruption activists just like your organization in the commitment to fight corruption in Zambia?
We are very clear that the recent launch of the National Police on Anti-Corruption Commission, it also underscores President Dicic's administration commitment towards the fight against corruption. However, the delayments in appointments may hinder the progress so far that the president has achieved in terms of a number of policies, the new anti-corruption bill, the anti-corruption police. There are a number of issues that President Hichilema has scored. But what we are saying that law enforcement agencies are not supposed to work because the president has told them to do so. No, it is the act itself that should speak for themselves to move in without fear of being hindered. So to achieve that, that's why we are calling that the Constitution of Zambia, it gives the present power that it shall appoint a substantive director general and ACC commissioner's board of members who shall be appointed by the president subject to ratification by the National Assembly of Zambia. The delay by the president appointing a substantive director general may hinder progress. Why I say may hinder progress is because we want to find out how many cases so far in the current regime that the ACC has pursued. Because if you remember very well, that the fight against corruption, which was launched in 2003 by late President Mwanawasa, we saw a number of cabinet ministers being fired and being dismissed, others even being arrested, others even being sentenced. For example, Madam Gladys Nyorongo, she was Minister of Lands by then, when she was sentenced 2 years of hard labor for abuse of office.
Solomon Ngoma is the Executive Director of Action Institute for Policy Analysis Center, or IPAC. He spoke with me from the Zambian capital, Lusaka. In Cameroon, a prominent anti-corruption activist received the endorsement of a group of opposition political parties and civil society ahead of the next general election. Akere Muna, who is also a lawyer, says he plans to weed out corruption in the Central African country as part of his mandate to improve the living standards of Cameroonians after winning the election. This after the Univers political party, the Popular Action Party, or PAP, the Union des Populations du Cameroun, or UPC, as well as several civil society groups recently endorsed Muna at a press conference. But analysts say it will be difficult for the opposition to win the presidential contest due to the dominance of the governing Cameroon People's Democratic Movement, or CPDM. For more about his reaction to his endorsement, his vision, and the prospects of his candidacy, I reached Akere Muna in the Cameroonian capital, Yaoundé.
For once, the Professor Prosper Nkumvondo, who has a party Univers that qualifies, what brought together some people with the oldest Cameroonian political party, which is the UPC. They got together, and another party, which is was created by the veteran Anglophone magistrate, Paul Aya, who is now retired, and many other civil society groups, youth groups and stuff like that. They brought them together, and they decided to endorse me. So it is quite humbling, and believe you me, the work starts now.
What is your vision for the people of Cameroon? For which reason you think they will rally around you?
Yeah, firstly, for the past 25 years, I've worked in the area of governance and anti-corruption. And I've been chairperson of the panel of the APRM at the AU level. I've been the head of the ECOSOC, the Civil Society Parliament, if you want to call it that, at the African Union level. At the African Development Bank, I've dealt with matters of governance and anti-corruption. So that has been my mainstay. And everybody's agreed that that is the biggest problem we have in the country. Okay? And corruption is so bad because it's cross-cutting. It will hit the roads, the hospitals, it will hit any kind of development project. So if you have a project to develop a country and it's corrupt, there's no way. You can't even fight against poverty. And another thing which is being verified and verified in many countries, is the fact that the more corrupt a country is, the more difficult is it to have peaceful transition. And I bet that's what we're going to have here, because if people have stolen so much, they're going to be afraid to leave power. So the big debate, of course, in many countries, and I'm sure you know about that, is the fact that do you develop an amnesty for economic crime so the guys can be at peace? So from that point of view, what do I bring to the table is a vast experience in governance matters. And secondly, to rethink our republic. Okay? So my idea is simple, is that we need to reconstruct our institutions. We have to do that. And I am willing to do that for just one term and leave. I mean, I'm 72. I don't think that I can carry on to be as old as the current president. So I just want to do one term, put the system back in place. I don't have a political party, so I have no interest to protect. Is to put back the system, to build a new system that will give hope for the younger guys of the future. So my mainstay is to fight against corruption, and secondly, preside over a transitional government that would reset the country.
What do you think makes you uniquely qualified, that you think is attractive enough for the people of Cameroon to vote for you? Because, as you know, the CPDM, the ruling party, has dominated Cameroon politics for a long time, making Paul Biya one long-term president on the continent. So what makes you think?
In the world. Well, I come with a unique expertise. When I was the head of the APRM, this African Peer Review Mechanism, I've evaluated so many countries. I've done Kenya, I've done Sierra Leone, I've done Liberia. So I know exactly where to go to, what to look for. As a civil society activist, I've been in the anti-corruption area for so long, and all the international institutions say Cameroon has endemic and systemic corruption. So that, I think, I can fix. And I'm a lawyer. I've been a lawyer for the past 46 years. I think I am well-tooled as it comes to fine-tuning, putting in place a new constitution and fixing the country. And I am bilingual, totally bilingual, French and English. And also, I am Anglophone. And I know exactly what irks the Anglophones. And I think an Anglophone is better placed to bring back peace and unity in the country. So I think with those that I can put on the table, at the risk of being immodest, I think there are very few Cameroonians who can match that.
Akere Muna is a lawyer and a prominent anti-corruption activist. He spoke with me from the Cameroonian capital, Yaoundé. In Togo, a prominent civil society leader says the recent attack of a Senegalese lawmaker in the capital, Lomé, undermines the constitutional provision that guarantees freedom of assembly. Professor Ekoué David Dossé is a surgeon and lecturer at the University of Lomé and the spokesperson of the Front Citoyen Togo Debout, a civic society group. He says the attack dented the country's international image. His remarks came after the authorities in Senegal condemned the attack and demanded justice. This after Guy Mario Sagna, a member of the ECOWAS parliament, was attacked during a meeting organized by an opposition group called the People's Majority Dynamics, or DMP. Local media reports say the government in Lomé took the necessary measures to guarantee the safety of the parliamentarian. But Professor Ekoué David Dossé tells me it is obvious to him that bad people use violence with a clear aim to stop the opposition meeting.
So political violence is something usual in Togo. But what happened last time is something very dangerous, because it happened when we were with parliament coming from ECOWAS. I want to speak about Guy Mario Sagna, who is Senegalese, and he came here in Togo for a mission, and during his parliamentary mission, he wanted to meet Togolese citizen, discuss about Togo situation, and discuss also about ECOWAS. And during this meeting, we saw aggressors beating everyone and it was a very, very bad picture for our country.
But Professor Dose, some people are saying that a Senegalese national or a lawmaker cannot come and meet people in Togo without alerting the authorities, which basically undermines the territorial integrity of Togo. And that is why this might have happened without seeking clearance, they argue.
I want to say clearly that nothing can justify what happened against Mr. Guillermo Arisanya. Nothing, really, because first of all, he's ECOWAS parliamentary people, and he has member of the parliament of ECOWAS. He has the possibility to represent all citizens in West Africa. He has the possibility to represent people of Togo. And the second is that if some consider that when he came, he didn't get the authorization to speak with people, can we say that this matter can justify what we saw? What we saw is something very unacceptable, something which is a very bad situation in the heart of Togolese, in the heart of all the people who saw the aggressors against Guillermo Arisanya, against journalists, against even a woman who were there during the meeting. So,
but Professor Dose,
nothing.
Concerns have been raised by supporters of the government that opposition and civil society groups willfully and intentionally break the law. And then when law enforcement carry out their mandate to ensure there's law and order, then civil society groups complain that why are they enforcing the law? How do you respond to that?
How did we violate the law? How? We are citizens of this country. And I think that as citizens of Togo, we have the freedom to meet, because our constitution allow us as citizens of Togo to meet and discuss about the country. When we were there, I am a medical doctor. I don't know, I'm not a bad man. I'm not a terrorist. I am a citizen of this country. So I was with some citizens, and we just want to stay in a place, discuss about our country. And as that, I think that we don't need some special authorization. But I want also to say that the organizer of the meeting, they sent a document to give information about this meeting. But it was a place in a church. First of all, that was the place where the organizer of the meeting decided to gather all people and to discuss with Mr. Guillermo Arisanya.
Professor Ekwe David Dose is a surgeon and lecturer at the University of Lomé and the spokesperson of the Front Citoyen Togo Debout, a civic society group. He spoke with me from the capital, Lomé. Sierra Leone's hip-hop music icon Cao Dinero, real name Amara Denise Touré, is the first ever entertainment ambassador to be appointed by the president of Sierra Leone. The award-winning African hip-hop king has released his new album, Heroes. He's currently in Washington, D.C. to launch his new album, and stopped by our VOA headquarters and spoke with my colleague, David Vandy.
Heroes. Well, you know, I'm very proud to say I'm an historian. I like to research. I like to know about my people, generations, you know. I'm fascinated about all the sacrifices made by people like Steve Biko, Thomas Sankara, Marcus Garvey, great black heroes, people who stood for a reason. You know, I realize that the music of today is just really gravitating towards, you know, let's have a happy time, merry time, without passing on knowledge and wisdom. You know, so because of growth, I have to make music that kind of like can transcend through generations. You know, so I had this idea about doing a very, very conceptual album. I titled it as Heroes, you know, where I can entertain and educate at the same time. So that's how Heroes came about.
And so far, how's it going? You know, when somebody releases an album, we can look at the entertainment part. We can look at how people are going to love it. But you also look at the financial aspect of it. You've spent a lot of money in it. And so how is the album doing by itself?
Well, we have 1 million plays on Audio Mac. You know, it's growing on Spotify. It's on all digital platforms, you know, and the reviews are great out there. I just got nominated at the African Entertainment Awards for two categories, Best Hip Hop Artist and Best Album, you know, in categories with great artists from Africa. I think that's just the beginning. Shot a couple of videos already. There's great songs in the album, you know, talking about African stories, you know, things that people can relate, you know, to in the continent, you know, our struggles, the questions we ask, you know. These are all the issues I tackle on different songs. But yeah, it's a party vibe too. There's a lot of songs in the album that you can have fun to, that you can, you know, like, it's a fusion album, you know, Afrobeat, hip-hop, reggae, all the sounds, you know, blending together. That's what this album is.
At some point in your career, in your musical career, you were known as the king of African hip-hop, you know.
Right, right.
And then you happened to win one of the biggest hip-hop awards in Africa. Let's talk about that a little bit.
Yeah, you know, because Sierra Leone is a very small country where I'm from, you know, I'm always battling with the reality that, you know, we are at a disadvantage, you know, because of the population. Music is a numbers game, you know. You have nations that have like 200 million people, like shout out to the big brothers, Nigeria, you know, Ghana. Sierra Leone, we got the short end of the stick, you know. So I had to come up with a strategy. The strategy was, in hip-hop, you can challenge, you can throw challenges out. You know, I was like, you know what, let me challenge the rappers in Ghana, in Nigeria, in Kenya, so we can go toe-to-toe on a lyrical battle. Nothing personal, nothing like out of grudge, it's just a lyrical sportsmanship, you know. So from that, you know, because of the, like, the fierce bullets, musical bullets that I put out, you know, it resulted to where my fan base drew in Cameroon, in Nigeria, in Ghana, South Africa, all those places, they are tuned in now. You go there, you say Sierra Leone, they will say Cal De Niro, you know, because of the artwork and the kind of content that I've been putting out. The award came from the African Entertainment Awards. It was a great category because Nasty C from South Africa was nominated. Calligraph Jones was in that category. Sarkodie from Ghana. You know, these are big heavyweights in the continent. You know, for me, Cal De Niro to come from Sierra Leone and still being nominated and I won, you know, it was a priceless moment. When I achieve these goals, it's really not about me. You know, my responsibility is to really push the envelope of a small nation, Sierra Leone, that is known for all the negative things, you know. And I feel like whatever role I can play with the talent and the gift God gave me, I think it comes handy, you know. So it was a special moment for Sierra Leone, not just Cal De Niro, winning that award over this heavyweight.
I'm from the land of X, rebel strong, survive. Sierra Leone, where we leave no punks alive. I can't stop you. You're trying to be 50, but you slap me. Just know he's so cocky. Original, no copy. Living line behind bars, dog Bill Cosby. Put him in the category only. I'm from a small nation, 7 million people, bar for bar. Screw the views, we are no equal. I'm waiting for any trash response, dog. And watch the sequel. Straight out of here. Y'all niggas can't see, dog. All these rappers is trash rap show.
That was Sierra Leone hip hop music icon ambassador Cal De Niro. He spoke with viewers David Vandy here in Washington. And right now is more music from African Collection.
Sungambe tse muntu, oh oh, adakala banji munja mama. Sungamvetse muntu, ah ah, muntu obanda umuntu, ah ah, sungamvetse muntu, muntu obanda umuntu.
That was music from the continent, and we hope you enjoyed it. Nightline Africa comes to you on Saturdays and Sundays at 16 and 18 hours UTC from the English to Africa service of The Voice of America and from the rest of the Nightline Africa team, including producer Douglas Impuga and engineer the great Tian Wang. We say a big thank you for joining us, and remember, as the elders say, stealing the village drum is easy, but beating it is another issue. I'm your host, Peter Clote, in Washington, D.C. Good evening, Africa.